everybody, and welcome to Comic Pop Visits. I'm Richard, along with Lenny and Jonathan again, and we are back for part two of our discussion and visit with DC and C. Michael McGannon, the authors of the Charlie Sullivan and the Monster Hunter series. So thank you, gentlemen, for taking the time and extending our visit with us today.
It's our pleasure. It's a great time being with you.
Always fun.
Kind of pulling back the curtain a little bit, I've at least had a lot of fun with the gentlemen and their family when they were kind of up in this area, and I hope I didn't wore out my welcome because they said they got home at 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know.
No, that was a lot of fun being able to see some of your part of the country, and we actually sometime hope that you invite us back because we got to go out to that place we couldn't get to because of the rain.
Monument Rock, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you cannot go to that when it's raining.
That rock is some kind of portal that when we walk,
it has to be, right? I mean, look at it. It has to be.
We're going to end up somewhere else.
Haven't heard of any cows disappearing through it, though, so I don't know.
It's actually, the fun thing is it's in the middle of, this is how Kansas we are. It's in the middle of a cattle pasture, and you actually have to go over. Yeah. That's okay. This isn't a spoiler. It exists. Look on Google Earth. And you actually have to go over cattle guards, which yep. And they actually are bars instead of the street for a short little moat.
That's awesome. I don't even know what cattle guards are.
Yeah, that's and that's part of the excitement, because when you don't know and you see that, you're like, oh, we're going to die. Tragic. That thing is going to eat us.
I'm from Orlando, man. I mean, just driving from here to you guys, seeing all the cows, it's like, this is amazing. Look at all the cows.
That's the thing, is there's nothing else.
And I got to show them we're not just all flat land, though.
Yeah, that's the cool part about that area up there, Scott Lake. I love that area because
I'm just curious about this. Where is Monument Rock?
It's about 10 miles north of Scott Lake.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you got to go
Wait
back
a second.
7
you
miles
live
off.
There and you haven't been there?
I have never been there, no.
I've never been to Cheyenne Bottoms either, so yeah.
I think I have, actually.
He has to do that to go home. So. I'm just teasing.
I know.
Like I said, we're having fun tonight. We've had fun with DC and Michael a lot of times here in the recent past, so we've gotten to know them. I consider them one of the friends, so hopefully they consider us some of their friends as well.
We love you guys.
We're going to shift gears.
The first part,
we kind of dove into the YA series with Charlie Sullivan and the Monster Hunters, and that's how I introduced them. But they are now diving into the adult market with their anthology, I believe you call it, or short story
that's
collection.
Wait a second, that's kind of scary how you say that.
Okay.
Let's identify which adult market.
Okay.
Not the adult only market, by the way. It's not the adult only market.
We're going into the horror fiction of mature nature, but
there we go.
No. They've actually done a short story collection of seven stories.
And they're all quite good.
Split them off. They've each taken a turn on six of the stories. Then the seventh one, they come back together again and write that last one together. I've read a couple of them. With my reading chores, I was able to do that. Lynn, he burned through them real fast again. So we want to discuss that part about it. And before Lynn dives off on some of his comments, first, what was the decision in going to a horror? Not a horror-esque, it is horror, diving into the horror genre.
I don't know if there's much of a decision there for us. I mean, we play with a lot. I don't think we feel limited by any genre. Even though we write a lot about monsters, I feel like that can translate to fantasy and science fiction, and I mean, whatever you want it to, really, these days. But well, I feel like...
With your Charlie Sullivan, I kind of consider that horror fantasy or dark fantasy.
Yeah.
But what I've read
dark
of your
fantasy for young adults,
right?
Yeah.
But with your new stuff, I kind of classify that more the horror genre, though.
Definitely. But I feel like we've always felt at home there, and even if Charlie Sullivan, our flagship, was not right at home with horror specifically, we've always been horror nuts as far as what we watch and what we read and the inspirations that we find.
Yeah, and I think the idea for writing in the horror genre and the dark fiction realm of writing stems a lot from some of our ideas for short film. you guys are crazy. What are you doing?
He's trying to ruin my life.
I'm over here trying to be all serious and professional. Like,
I'm sorry if you were looking for professionalism. Wrong podcast.
But we actually have a few stories that are being written as screenplays movies and short films, and we actually. What's going to be really interesting, and Lynn's going to kill me again because I'm going to give another teaser, and he's going to hate me for it. But we'll actually, and we may talk about this later, but we're going to start. We've got a couple podcasts that we're starting, but we also have a web series, a video series that we're starting that will take place in very short segments. And we'll be interlaced within our podcast, but that first web series that we're doing actually walks you through a series of searching in the midst of the Chaos trilogy of books that are being written, those short stories, that first book that you've just read. So there's a web series. Well, you may see 5 seconds of a video. You may see 3 minutes of a video each week. And it's all going to interlace with the Chaos horror stories. So a lot of our horror writing is actually coming from video and movie screenplays that we're writing that we're saying we really just want to translate some of our stories into this medium of writing. And we just really enjoy it. We feel at home there and feel like we've found a unique voice in that style of writing.
All right, I have to ask you one question. I tried, but will you please pronounce that word for me?
Which one?
Not Chaos, so the other one.
Oh, the title is Chaos Obsidiary.
Okay, I had it right. I hate to say it wrong, and then I'll say it wrong for the rest of my life for some reason.
What is Obsidiary?
It means to besiege.
Yeah, it's Latin for to besiege.
Okay. Okay, smartass.
Did you hear that, DC? He just called you a smartass.
I was actually talking to you.
Yeah, but you can't prove
that.
That's
right. You haven't been to Monument Rock, and you don't know what are those things called. You don't know what a.
I didn't know how to say it, but I knew what it meant.
Okay, I'm done.
So a direct translation.
Sue me
if I can be so bold. A direct translation might be to besiege chaos. Or is that incorrect?
Yeah, and I'll put into the context because the stories are written between two cities. There's two cities that are featured between the seven stories. And so it basically means that the people of these cities are literally being besieged by chaos.
I got that. Trust me. can I just go ahead and
go
do this?
For it.
Okay, so in the back of this book, I'm reading these stories and they are just edgy and well timed and just very well written stories. And then I get to the back and I don't want it to be over already, and I'm very depressed. So I get to these author notes, and lo and behold, C. Michael McGannon has made the mistake of asking me a question. So here I attempt to answer it, and I hope this isn't too overdone, but. It was a very interesting question for me. It's something that gets my mind thinking. I love it when authors and just in their stories, but you know, you actually take a step further, Mike and Michael, excuse me, and you literally ask, "What do you think of The Fly?" And that was one of the reasons that I was so curious when we were speaking earlier, DC, is if these authors' notes were going to remain, and I'm really glad they are, because I think that that's something that's fun for a lot of fans, especially of horror, because with horror. You know, you change one thing and you change everything. And so every little detail in horror, this is my opinion, it seems to matter so much. So it was very important. Was The Fly there? Was The Fly real? Was The Fly, what was that fly? In The Fly, and you asked, Michael McGannon wrote this, and he has this character that's basically a fly. And in the very beginning of the story, it buzzes in. And so... After reading it and finding out what all happens to the main character, Tom, in relation to this fly, he poses the question, I don't have it with me. How exactly did you say the question, Michael, if you have
it? There's almost, not to give any spoilers away, but I mean, in The Fly, there's almost a you could take it two ways. You could take it as a, you know, Tom is going crazy and it's a psychological break, or as Tom is going through something that is very akin to demonic possession or demonic oppression. And I kind of, in the first drafts of The Fly, it was more, you know, in this final version, it's kind of subtly interlaced. But in the very first version, it was, you either read it as one or the other. And so my question to whoever reads it is, you know, do you think this is something that is just all in Tom's head, or did he actually go through this?
And see, my crazy ass, excuse me, we have an explicit tag. I actually answered it in both ways, because I think both things. I can see very much how the fly is real. He even has a name. He's very specific. He does things. And I love, by the way, without giving anything away about that, I love the way you name him. That was very clever. The other thing is I can also see the more cynical side of me sees that, you know, that this could just be, I think the fly is real either way. I don't think he's imagined the fly itself. I think that he may have and put a lot of his own evil onto the fly, and he's using it as kind of a scapegoat. And it's fun to wander back and forth for me between, you know, Tom wants to be, he tries to exemplify himself as a good person. He's very clean. He's nice to his friends. He's a good person. So why would he want to, you know, do bad things? And the fly makes him. So is it a demon or is it just a scapegoat? And that is so much, that's one of the biggest fun. And I was glad to be able to, and it's weird because it's almost like I'm not answering it. I'm saying, well, it's both. But to me, and this is the important part. In the context of the name of these two towns, can I go ahead and say those?
Yeah.
Are Divinity and Apocalypse. And in the context of the Divinity Apocalypse world, I say that this fly is definitely a demon. Nothing. I don't think anything's a figment. I think a normal day at the park is a figment of your imagination there. So that, you know, that's that. I think he's definitely the former rather than the latter in the context of your world. But I guess we'll see more develops. The first thing I want to say about this is I knew it from the, you know, you don't give anything away at the beginning and it's very subtle, but by the time you're halfway through it, at least for me, I was like, I know something's going on here. These aren't just different interlaced stories. And I could feel the connections building in the stories. And was that something that you planned, or was that something that was just more organic?
I definitely think it was organic. I think DC was about to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. You know, as much as we like to plan things out while we're writing these stories individually and then sharing them with each other, it seemed to fit. It worked that these stories were part of the same world. And what you'll see in the next two volumes in this series is a peek into the expanded worlds of this universe. But, you know, it's definitely something that happened naturally to connect these stories.
I think you said you wrote Carnival Street, what, 2009?
Yeah, I started writing Carnival Street back in 2009.
And then The Grave Window was written around that same time. And so we already had some stories kind of just on the back burner for whenever we released a horror compilation. And then as the time drew closer, it was like, hey, these all kind of work together.
I've always believed that every writer and every artist, you know, everything that they create is, in a sense, there is a world. It's yeah. Their world. It's the world inside their mind. It's what every artist, and I consider a writer an artist, every artist is trying to show is what he sees in his mind. And that's something I think you two gentlemen do very well. I felt like this is something else. I was very tired when I wrote these notes. It was about midnight, and I get up at 5 a.m. So by the end of the fifth story, I could have probably drawn you a crude map of Divinity and Apocalypse. Like, I felt like that they were in a – they're somewhere. You know, you could see them.
Yeah.
They're like the twin cities of evil. and then I do have to – go ahead.
By just a quick note, like I said, I've just jumped into the first two. I haven't gotten to the rest yet, but just by those first two, and I could be completely off base here, and we talked about the two cities, twin cities. To me, the first two stories weren't quite, but were almost a mirror. And is that kind of how it weaves through the story, basically?
It doesn't seem like these cities, in my opinion, gentlemen, it doesn't seem like these cities would connect at all. And then it seems like, in the same story almost, that they actually share a physical border. And then it seems like at the same time that one is an illusion of the other, and there's so much going on, and you really don't know where exactly you are. And okay. Yeah, and that's kind of the trick of it. And if I would have only read two stories, I may have said, these stories are nothing alike. They have nothing. What the hell is this kid talking about? the transient and the fly, they had nothing to do with each other. But, you know, as you move further through, you can kind of see the formation of the border around what feels like a very real place.
Well, I was thinking of the skin and the fly.
Oh, the transient's third. Yeah. Sorry.
So that might not be.
Yeah, that's easy for you to remember because you haven't read The Transient, so you wouldn't know.
All right, rub it in. But that's kind of how I felt, though. It's kind of and like I said, I don't know if it was intentional, but it felt like when you did the skin and you did. Oh, God, I just went blank.
The fly.
Yeah, thank you. The fly. It felt like you were feeding off each other, and it was constructed pretty similar. That's why I was wondering, are these cities kind of mirrors of each other? Because they were similar stories, and there was that going to kind of continue the flow
it's,
through.
It's actually really creepy that you guys maintained that you did not write this together.
True.
It's really interesting because we did not write these stories together, and it wasn't until several years later that we actually began to feel the connection that was there, but there was no like map or, you know, these cities are connected here. It just happened. And when we read each other's stories, we were like, holy cow, look what we just did. And, you know, and so it was just like, there's a connection. And so what actually happened at the very end of it all, when we wrote the first six stories, and they were not written in the order that they are in the book. We rearranged the order of the stories in the book because we felt like there was a natural progression. And if you actually read the stories and pull out the times and the dates that are in the stories, they actually produce a chronological timeline that actually was not planned, and it completely freaked us out when we found it. So we go to that. We get to the end of the six stories and find this timeline, and we find these connections. And then I said, you know what? I'm pulling Carnival Street back out because I think Carnival Street connects them all. And, you know, then I asked Michael to put his voice into Carnival Street. And then that's where it ended up. Actually, Carnival Street was the fastest written story we've ever done. It happened like overnight. When I handed him the story, it was like done the next day. And then it went through an editing process and cleaned up. But Carnival Street kind of connects them. Without giving too much away, you see the bridge. But I will say that Carnival Street probably gives the most insight into the world that you're going to experience in the next volume.
And I think, just to throw out there, I feel like each city has a very distinct personality to it. I don't know if you want to say anything about Apocalypse, or if you want to keep a lot of it kind of in the mystery realm that it is. But
yeah, I just like to leave it there. Actually, yeah. The original intent was that the city of Apocalypse would actually never be named. I would be the only person who ever knew the name of the city. When Michael actually used the name of the city in one of his stories, it kind of let the cat out of the bag. But
sorry,
you went screaming to him and started beating on. What did you do? What did you do?
Did you tell him the name, or did he just literally pick it
out?
Yeah,
after it was all written, I told Michael, because he's like, "Well, what is there a name to your city?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it's Apocalypse." You know, almost if you and you'll get a little peek into this in one of the intros, I think, to Transient, you see some rearrangement of an ancient text that actually takes out a real city's name and puts in Apocalypse. Hmm. So it's, you know, it's kind of messing with some blurry lines there, but
which I love, and it's kind of funny because I feel like that's more of a weird fiction thing. I feel like Divinity is home to a lot of the other weird fiction sections, as opposed to just the dark fiction and horror.
Right.
But for me, I feel like Divinity is a place you could find, even if it didn't want you to find it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry, I dived off on Lynn into my own little deal, so I'll let Lynn go for some more.
No, that's okay. That's just fine. I just wanted to get back to where I was in my little bit of notes here. Okay, the one thing that I have to absolutely say is that I definitely have a favorite, a personal favorite from the collection. I don't know what it was, but the Grave Window...
you don't know what it is, but it's your favorite?
I don't know what it is about it, Richard.
Okay. That's a little bit more clear.
I read the context.
I don't know what it was about it that drew me so much. And the window itself. And actually, I don't want to go give away too much, but the progression towards the conclusion of that story was a lot of fun for me. And I really enjoyed that tension. The curiosity. I'm a very curious person. I think I felt like I could relate a lot with the poor hero in that story. Another thing I'd like to say, I really want to talk about before I kind of just in my notes here, and I really, really cared about these characters. From The Places I Go Before My Dreams, which by the way was viscerally disturbing, just descriptions it has. I said this. I felt like I was getting a Dante-esque glimpse of hell. I absolutely loved Mr. Fleece. I felt he was a very well-developed character. And I don't want to go too much about him because he's a good, fun surprise. But Mr. Fleece, he's a good guy. And then I really enjoy, I do have to give away this little bit of spoiler, the kind of standoff between the Cutters and Mr. Fleece is one of my absolute favorite scenes, and I could really visualize that scene, and I loved that that synergy, that the stories kind of blending in that very moment, which I think was from actually another story.
You got me.
Yeah, I'll have it in just a second.
Do you want us to kind of
the death I see in you? Thank you.
Do you want us to kind of edit around this part, or is it all right to give that away?
No, you're good.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
We already did this whole thing. We just weren't recording. This is a pre-planned interview. I've fixed these questions in my mind. The beginnings are organic. I am artificial. They are sugar. I am sweet and low. And but I do really feel that way. I felt like that scene was awesome. See, I wouldn't have just been so bold to say it if I didn't know. And then I've pretty much said everything. I'm very much anticipating. I think we all are anticipating more along this lines. I know we haven't all gotten a chance yet. This is very fresh material. I mean, yep. It's not like these guys are slacking that much. It's been available for all of 12 and a half hours. I really hope that my notes are helpful, and I really hope that my review is helpful. Definitely a 5-star review from me. And what did you think about the 2 stories you read?
Well, the 2 I've read, I enjoyed them because, like I said, it had that mirror image, and I felt, you know, there was a connection somehow, even though it was just the first 2. I had no clue until you guys were discussing the connection, so
my
so
bad.
That was kind of like, well, okay, so I was on the right track. So, but I enjoyed them. One of the things, and I'm kind of like April in this, and it's nothing against the way it was written, it's just the style. Short stories I'm not the biggest fan of because I like a juicier book. I like this. That's why it's a lot of times with the series I get into those a lot more, because if they want, they can go in so many different directions. But with this, you're doing that unique approach where it's the short stories, but they're interconnected. Now, you know, I was on the right track, so I feel more comfortable with it now going forward, because it is the story. It's complete. It might be pieces of the city. And you said it was going to be a planned trilogy so far. If not, you might sneak in another one here or there if you decide to at that later point in time. But it's, you know, that lets me know that, okay, these aren't going to be just short stories and thrown away. They're actually meant to be connected and a lot fuller than what they are. So
I think I understand what Richard's saying. Sometimes when I read a short story, I really like one of the short stories that I think that it was most profoundly had that impact on me that he's talking about was Ursula Le Guin's "Those That Walk Away from Ernalius" is a very famous story, and it's a short story. It's written, I assume, about Pern. I haven't read much else by her, but Earthsea, not Pern, excuse me. But it seems like it. And I read the short story, and at the end I'm like, well, crap. So what does happen to the ones that walk away from Ornelas? And I feel like that with a lot of short stories. You read it, and you're like, that's it? You know, like, I want more. And you hope a lot of times that there will be more, and then most times there isn't. So it was really fun to read stories and then felt like you were getting more, even though, you know, like, whenever some of the characters reappeared in new stories, I'm like, wow, there he is again. You know, and it's just, it really made it fun to not feel like the story was just, oh, it's a passing fancy. And I'm more of a novel guy like Richard. I really like to get really deep into the characters and everything like that stuff. So it was fun to see short stories that were treated with a little bit more of the novel dignity. Like, well, yeah, these characters, you know, these scenes, they may be, you know, it's more of like a tease. It's like, we're not really going to tell you exactly how they're connected. Figure it out. That's why it's called chaos. And it was really fun. And I felt like at the end of it, I felt like I knew it. I felt like I was right. All right. Okay.
The interconnectedness was very important for us to achieve. And even if it wasn't blatant, you know, you kind of find out about it as you go, but it was important for us to achieve that. And here's another tease for you. The first story in the second volume is already written. And I can tell you that maybe the cutters appear again.
You guys know how close to the edge I am. Like, there's like 11 series that I'm waiting for the new book to come out.
Len, if it makes you feel any better, you're the type of reader that we write to.
And make you pay. No.
No, I love it. I do love it. I love the anticipation. It's part of what's fun in life. I really enjoyed the first three novels of the... I hate to break back into your original series, but I fear we're going to run out of time for our interview, and I wanted to this said.
We got other stuff to talk about.
I really enjoyed the first three novels of the Charlie Sullivan series, but I read them, like, literally in less than a week, and now that you have these updated, revised versions, especially with new scenes, new material, then it's definitely like, okay, now I'm going to go back, and I'm going to reread them, and I'm going to enjoy them, and I'm going to get every last ounce of imaginative nectar out of those stories in anticipation of 2016. So I got something to look forward to. I got, you know, a little Christmas coming early next year, so I can't wait for that. That's
aren't you guys proud you're spreading your nectar all over?
I'm still rolling the word nectar around in my head.
Sorry, I knew I was walking into that, but it had to be said.
I'll kind of dovetail a little bit into that. To get back to the industry side a little bit, you've had to go off, and the reason that you became a little behind on your stories was because you had a unique opportunity, or an opportunity at least arose, where you became publishing entity as well as authors. And you mentioned Suzanne earlier. She's one of your authors that is under your publishing branch, but now you have, I guess you would call it, a subsidiary. So, and I noticed that you put that out there on your Facebook page about how, you know, you want these two universes or separate.
Yeah.
You want the young adult to stay with the young adults, the more mature stuff, you know, to be with that own imprint. But we've never mentioned those imprints yet. And off the top of my head, I can remember the first one was Wyvern?
Wyvern Peak and Darkwater Press.
Yeah. Okay.
Wyvern's Peak Publishing is the first imprint. That is what Charlie Sullivan, the Monster Hunters, that's where their home is. And what's really cool about Wyvern's Peak is you actually find Wyvern's Peak in the story. You know, Dragon's Mountain in the story in book one. And Michael actually has an entire series that's yet to be published that he's been writing since I think he was 10 years old that is based on the legend of the Wyvern. So Wyvern's Peak is our first imprint. Dark Waters Press is our dark fiction horror imprint. That's what Chaos and the Chaos series is home to. And then we have a third imprint, Incendia Books, that will okay. launch in this next year with Michael's new, what I'd call a dark fantasy, okay. almost Victorian-esque series. That's pretty intense and some of my favorite settings. So and it gets pretty dark, but that's going to be for kind of a new adult, late teen, new adult age group. The place that we can find a home for some of these other stories. And then, yeah, I mean, we're working with Suzanne Lambden. She's author of the Dead Hearts series, Morbid Hearts and Forsaken Hearts and Vengeful Hearts is out right now. And I think next month, if I'm not mistaken, her fourth book in her series hits the shelves. And so we're pretty excited. And when we started doing this, we honestly had no idea what we were doing. Either as writers of fiction or as publishers, and we started to get some interest from some people in the industry but didn't like what we heard that was coming back to us, so we decided to try to figure some things out on our own, and a decade later we're still trying to figure out what we're doing. it's a big world and it's really a very ugly, hairy beast sometimes, but I think we've learned a lot and we've come a long ways, and now we're able to turn our attention to help other authors at least get a start and produce some quality entertainment. So, you know, we like working with people like Suzanne. Suzanne is a hard, hard worker. She's out there just busting her tail every day to take care of her fans and write new stories, and you know, that's kind of the attitude we get up with every day, is that we want to bust our butts taking care of people, making sure that our stories are what they need to be. So, you know, it's really a whole new world for us, but we did have to take a step back, make sure that we were doing the right thing and doing it the right way, and then launching forward. I foresee that 2016 is going to be an extremely busy year for us, and we're very excited about that.
Well, you kind of mentioned you're wanting to try to give a leg up to some of these budding authors. When do you see that aspect of your companies and publishing branches developing? In 16, 17, when you're going to be actually looking for submissions, or how are you going to handle that part of it?
When we're accepting submissions, you mean?
Yes. The process to do all that.
Probably in 2016. We've done a little bit of it. We've tested a little bit of it this past year, trying to figure out some things on our end. But I think we'll accept a couple of things, particularly with Dark Waters Press, with the horror genre, in this next year. We do have a few inquiries for Wyvern's Peak, for that young adult and middle grade group that we're reading through right now. But, I mean, I got to be honest with you, we're going to be very picky with that. But one of the things I think we're going to start with in the coming year, especially with Dark Waters Press, is a writing contest. And okay. So I think we're going to kick off by trying to build community under that imprint by doing a contest instead of trying to compile an anthology or something or find the next big novel. We've got a lot of writers that come to us and say, hey, would you look at this? Or would you look at this? Right. And I said, why don't we just do a contest? And everybody's pretty excited about that. So I think we can get out some really cool material, make most of it, if not all of it, free to readers everywhere, and build a community of writers that are just having a lot of fun with what they're doing.
Okay, when you get ready to put some of that stuff out, you have to keep us in mind, and we'll put it out there for you as well. And if you want to come back on to do a little bit of a blurb for us, we'll get it out there for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, one of the things Jonathan's kind of been chomping at the bit, so we'll get into this, because this is a new, you're getting into our area. I don't know if I like that. I don't know. But You're doing podcast or getting ready to do podcast on the mythological type creatures, the horror, I guess you would call them horror-esque creatures. Do you want to delve into a little bit of that and what you foresee in that in the future?
Yeah, Michael, why don't you talk about the Monster Guys, because the Monster Guys podcast will be first. Yeah. Jonathan, are you trying to say something, or are we supposed to talk first?
You can talk first. I'll ask questions later.
Michael, talk about the Monster Guys podcast.
Yeah, I think it was the last podcast we did where we talked a little bit about conventions, and like I said, there are times where we'll be doing a panel on, you know, the Dragon Gate, or we'll be doing a panel on monsters from Europe or monsters from Asia, the Japanese yokai. And if we have some time afterwards, we'll do a Q&A session, and people really seem to enjoy that. There was one convention that we went to where we didn't have, you know, nobody else was scheduled in that room after us for the rest of the night, and we spent about 2 hours total in that room just answering questions that people were, you know, wondering off the top of their head about monsters. And it's an area that we specialize in, but it's an area that you don't want to, like, throw all of that into a book and bog down a story, because that becomes boring. So, but it's something we're still passionate about, so we thought, you know, why not do a podcast on it and really give people a chance to delve into the specifics, you know, the place where that monster comes from and where it clashes with this culture and where the word comes from, how it works with scientific phenomenon. And that's basically the basis for our podcast. We've got, what, 5 monsters that we've talked about so far?
Yeah, we start right off the bat with fairies, and people think they know what fairies are. People think that Tinkerbell flying over Disney is a fairy, and we open up a bee's nest with that one. So, you know, we jump into a lot. We're going into a lot of different countries, into some really deep folklore, and pulling out the heart of monsters.
Sounds really interesting. Yeah. Actually, I'm gonna have to check that podcast out.
Which folklores do you go into?
All of them. As many as we can, yeah.
Yeah, like Bigfoot and stuff like that, or...
Yeah, and really what we're doing right now is kind of breaking down, like, fairies, for instance, covers a wide range of monsters from a lot of different cultures and a lot of different countries. And then we'll do, I think we're actually going to do a spinoff podcast that may be like a 5-minute type podcast where we delve deep into Japanese yokai, because we talk about Japanese culture quite a bit in our panels. And, you know, there's just literally thousands of yokai. So you'd be going until you're dead with, you know, that information. So, yeah. You know, from that to vampires to witches, we do some weird stuff. Like, you know, we pull weird stories like Bigfoot sightings and what happened to the great white shark that was pulled down to the depths of the ocean, never to return again. So we've got interesting segments like that, you know, where we get into more popular legends and mythology. And then we dive deep into the heart of the folklores and mythology from around the world.
And I think you were asking about Bigfoot, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a good example. You know, you find Bigfoot-like creatures all over the world, and that's something that we've done in the podcast, is say, hey, this doesn't just exist here. You also have this figure that they're basically describing the same thing way over on the other side of the world. So we do take that into account, where we do point out that, hey, you have, you know, these two extremely strange creatures that are basically the same thing in completely different parts of the world.
Now, this may be a little off base, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it because that's what I do. Does that kind of, for you guys, does that lead a little more credence to, you know, monsters may not be just such fairy tales? Because you do find, as for example, in like Papua New Guinea, you find vampire myths, and then in England, whereas these things were found, and there's no way these cultures could have been mixed at the time. You know what I'm, that you see all, and I'm not just with vampires, with all, like you were saying about Bigfoot, and then like even in this country, there's Bigfoot, there's the Jersey Devil, and there's, you know, and that's just in two, the Appalachian, the Chupacabra, which is in three parts. That's one I forgot, but Jonathan mentioned that are pretty much the same monster in three different parts of the same country, but it's such a large country that's culturally diverse. You got the Ozark Mountains, the Appalachian Mountains, and then the Sierra Nevada. And all of them are the host to apparently big, hairy monsters. And to me, I mean, do you kind of feel sometimes like,
well, stop
maybe
going
they
there,
are?
Man. If you wouldn't go there, they wouldn't see anything.
Yeah, we jump into a lot of that. And, you know, I think one of the things, like, for instance, the second podcast that will air for the Monster Guys is about the incubus and the succubus.
Oh, talk about adult material.
Right.
we go into some of that. I told you we're into the adult market now.
Not the adult only market.
Where it references the involvement and the abuse of the historical church and pull some of that context out of history and say, if you want to know why we have these monsters, this is where it started. This is where these stories began. This is why these stories had to be told in order to protect or save or rescue somebody, or somebody was running from something. And I think we translate quite a bit the legends of monsters into our human existence. Why do these monsters exist? You know, we don't just talk about, you know, the Dullahan and why does he run around terrorizing the old country, but we talk about why he began and what he means to us in our human psyche and where that leads us to as a culture. So it'll be some interesting topics.
And I feel like, to go a little bit deeper into that question, I don't think there is a definite answer of yes or no, because I feel like for some monsters, I would say, yeah, definitely, that came from something that was true. And for others, I feel like you can't really say whether that was there or not. So I think you have to take each one and really look at it and say, hey, is this something that really did exist at that time?
And for instance, the Lumpus Kitty of the South United States, that's a real animal. That's a real monster. And that is a scary beast. And I grew up believing that Wumpus Kitties ate little children that misbehaved. And then I grow up to think that it didn't exist. It was just a fairy tale. And then later on, I find out that that's a real monster that roams the woods in Louisiana and Arkansas and some of the southern states. So there's some interesting correlations there.
For sure.
And yes, Bigfoot is real. You heard it here, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
I saw him crossing the street last night.
He's awesome. Coming out of the Piggly Wiggly. He had some diapers, a few brews.
Well, the wife says to go do something. One of the things you've been mentioning, like these podcasts have already been put in the can on some of these episodes. When are they going to be released? Do you have a time frame for that?
Yeah, we got a little bit behind schedule because of the re-releases of the books. Those became much bigger than they thought they would be, but we're actually looking at October to launch the Monster Guys podcast. Another great teaser that's just going to make Lynn very happy, I think, is that we're actually producing a podcast just for Charlie Sullivan and the Monster Hunter series of books.
Nice. Okay.
Where every episode we talk about characters, we talk about locations, we talk about weapons, we talk about all the places that they visit. So we're going to do a series of podcasts that just directly speaks to Charlie Sullivan, the Monster Hunters.
That would be awesome.
Cool.
That would be cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Exciting news there.
And I grew up, I have to concentrate when I say monsters.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
And you said define monsters. Well, when I was growing up, I would say, well, how do you define monsters?
Monsters.
with Herman and all those. So that's one of my quirks in my life is we watched a lot of reruns of that show. And so anymore in this day and age, I have to really concentrate on how I pronounce that word because I was forever scarred by the monsters. So.
What, you're trying to say that monsters is incorrect?
But one of the things we're having fun with here, when you definitely get those out, definitely keep us in the loop. We want to help out, promote whatever way we can to help you guys. One of the things I want to let you guys, if you want to, take an opportunity real briefly here. You've been to a lot of conventions. You've met a lot of your fans. Just one of those one times, do you want to mention anything to them? Or just say, you know, if nothing else, hold on to your pants or... just a kind of a signature for your fans out there saying, you know, this is yet to come.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, you know, over the years it's been so exciting to meet so many different people and people who are reading the books, people who come to our panels, and it's just, it really is a privilege to be able to do what we do, you know, writing books and entertaining at conventions. And, you know, we just want to say a huge shout out to the fans, because without you, we're nothing. Beyond that, you know, 2015, we were pretty quiet. We were, you know, locked down in the editing basement, and my wife put this huge padlock on the cellar. We couldn't get out. We didn't eat for like 4 months. At the end of the summer, we came out and we were pasty white. We couldn't see. I mean, we were locked down for a long time. And we've come out of that basement now. We're eating again. I can see in the sunlight for very short periods of time. But what I can say is that 2016, we're going to be very busy. We're back on the convention circuit. We actually start a little bit at the end of the year. We'll be doing Wizard World here in Tulsa. I think we've got a couple of other small appearances between now and the end of the year. But 2016, it is our plan that we will be full-time again around the country, and just getting back out there with people and hanging out with people, which is what we love to do. So thanks for everything you've done for us so far, and just look out, because here we come.
We're going to probably wrap it up with that, because it's getting late and you've been kind enough to visit with us. I know we've taken up a lot of your time, but just to put my own two cents in, if Lynn wants to as well, I've visited with these gentlemen a couple of different times and their family. Very wonderful family here. If you have an opportunity to go to one of the conventions they're at, stop by, visit with them, go to their panels. You'll be they're just good people. You feel comfortable around them, and you go away with a new friend. And that's a rare thing sometimes in this day and age. And I think, I don't know if Lynn, you kind of felt that a little bit, because we had almost a intimate, I don't know what you would call it, presentation with the McGannon. So, and it proved to be really fun and interesting.
Yeah, I would just say, for a personal note, I know that you guys have, you know, you've been doing this a lot and you've been at it a long time, but for somebody that is where you've been, that doesn't really know what they're doing and doesn't have a clue, you know, it's really nice to meet people that, you know, they are nice, they are doing it, they, you know, and they're approachable. You can still talk to this person. I feel like with DC and Michael, with you guys, that, you know, that you treat your fans like they're people and not like you're above them. And I, as a fan, I can say that. I think I'm your fan. You know, as a fan, I honestly feel like that you care about your fans, and it's not just this, of course I care about my fans. You know, it's very, very heartfelt, and we really appreciate you guys doing what you do, so just keep at it. It's great people.
I appreciate that. It means a lot. It really does.
If you're going to be out there searching around on the internet, interwebs, if you're searching on the, if you're going to be out there searching on the interwebs, be sure to check out monsterhunters-thebook.com, shortly monsterguys.com, or DC has his own website, dcmcgannon.com. You can go to Facebook and find them on Facebook as well. You'll be pleasantly surprised with everything you see and the communications you get with them. Really nice people, very good works. Treat yourself to Charlie Sullivan and the Monster Hunters, and then dive into Chaos after that. And I can't pronounce the rest of the title.
Lynn, help me. Obsidiary.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Lynn.
I didn't know it till today.
But we'll leave it off there. That's going to do it tonight. Again, thank you, DC and Michael, for joining us. We definitely appreciate the time you've taken up for us.
It's awesome talking to you again, guys. Seriously.
Thanks so much.
It was nice meeting you guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
Always blessed.
Yeah.
We've had fun. We hope you've enjoyed and had fun listening to this interview. be sure to tune in for other podcasts at comicpoplibrary.com. We will talk to you later, and hopefully we'll visit with the McGannons as well in the future. So have a good one, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.
See ya.
And they go away, so he locked me in as the night begins. I see the teeth behind the smile. Metal ghouls haunt this broken child. They followed home, and I'm not alone. Don't steal the breath from me tonight. I'm hiding with no means to fight. There's someone in the hall. I can't escape them all. I saw them kill these twisted souls. They only haunt the child who knows. Or are they in my head? The monsters under my bed.